Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
For joining today's webinar. My name is Kim Wagner, and I've been with PJR for about 8 years now almost, and I work on the Aerospace Executive Committee as a technical reviewer. I'm also an aerospace auditor for AS9100, 9110, and 9120. Today, our topic is the AS9104/1 2022 standard. And we're going to talk about how the new revision will affect aerospace certified companies. Okay, so our discussion topics today are going to be the new requirements for aerospace certified organizations in the new AS9104 standard, the future of remote auditing, new documentation submission requirements, and new audit duration calculations. So we're going to dig into each of these and explore how they're going to affect any certified organizations. So new requirements for aerospace certified organizations. We'll start with 8.5.1.3.3, which says the AQMS standard, i.e. 9100, 9110, or 9120, utilized for certification shall be selected based on the organization's scope of certification. And there's a note here to refer to the intended application of the AQMS standards to determine the selection of the appropriate standard. So if you have a copy of your standard, I think it's on page 2 that has the intended application of each standard, but we're going to break those down here as well. So what does this mean for you as a certified organization? The scope of your organization must match the standard to which your organization is certified to. So during transition, we will be reviewing all scopes and will inform your organization if a change is required. So let's talk about what the intended application is for each standard. For AS9100, which is by far our largest of the three standards, most of our aerospace clients are certified to AS9100. It is for organizations that design, develop, or provide aviation, space, and defense products and services, and by organizations providing post-delivery activities, including the provision of maintenance, spare parts, or materials for their own products and services. Then we have AS9110, which is intended for organizations whose primary business is providing maintenance or continuing airworthiness management services for civil or military aviation articles and products by OEMs with maintenance, repair, and overhaul operations that are operated autonomously or that are substantially different from their production operations. And finally, we have AS9120, which is for organizations that procure parts, materials, and assemblies and resell these products to a customer in the aviation, space, and defense industries. So for our distributors here. And so again, what PJR will be doing is we'll be reviewing all scopes of our clients and make sure they're certified to the proper standard. You know, for example, I think there may be a few organizations that are certified to AS9100, but are distributors. So probably the proper standard is going to be AS9120 for them. And so we will be reaching out to any clients that need a standard change, and we'll then take the appropriate actions if that's necessary there. The next clause we wanted to talk about here is 8.5.11.1. This says that CBs shall suspend certification and retain documented information supporting the suspension decision for any of the following conditions. A, when an organization fails to reestablish conformance within 90 days from the date the nonconformance was issued, or B, when an ethical complaint or ethical-related nonconformity has been substantiated with supporting objective evidence. So we'll break down these two sub-clauses here, starting with the first one. So what does this mean? This means that an organization must provide immediate correction for the nonconforming condition, identify root cause of the nonconformity, identify and implement corrective actions required to address the root cause and return the process to conformance, and 4, implement any other actions to assure the condition does not repeat. Now, sometimes that fourth step happens over an extended time. We'll be reviewing that on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes these other actions to ensure the condition doesn't repeat just take a little more time to implement. So in that case, the reestablishment of conformance is completed after step three, and effectiveness verified, and the nonconformity will be closed after step four. but this all must be completed within 90 days from the date the nonconformance was issued, or PGR is required to suspend the organization. And let's look at an example here of a nonconformance and how things will be closed out within 90 days. So for example, if a nonconformance was issued due to the management review missing some required inputs, the organization has 90 days to, one, either complete a new management review, including those missing inputs, or conduct a gap review to cover those missing inputs. So that's the correction. It kind of brings that, it corrects that issue that was found and brings that back into conformance. Then two, need to discover the root cause that led to the missing input. So determine why this was left out in the management review. What was missing in your process that allowed this to happen? Then three is identify and implement actions that address that root cause, that address that why, and bring the process back into conformance. And so that is when the establishment of conformance is completed. That all needs to be done within 90 days or we are required to suspend. Then you must implement any other actions necessary to ensure the nonconformance does not repeat. So that's a little bit different here in the new version of the standard in terms of the timing requirements. Okay, and that second scenario for suspension, if we are informed of an ethical complaint, we must investigate. This could include requesting documentation, conducting reviews, by conducting a special audit, etc. For example, if we are contacted by someone, if we receive a complaint that says that there's an organization out there that is shipping non-conforming product knowingly without proper disposition or informing of interested parties, that's something that we have to investigate. And then if, you know, verified upon investigation would lead to suspension. Those are a couple scenarios there. Okay, the next clause we're going to look at is 9.1.2, which says AQMS certified organizations that have their AQMS standard certification suspended shall provide notification to their aerospace, space, and defense, or AS&D customers within 15 days of suspension. So this is just something to keep in mind that if your organization ever does face suspension, hopefully not, you are required to notify your aerospace, space, and defense customers within 15 days of that suspension. So very important to keep in mind. Okay, another big change here in the new version of the standard is that it no longer recognizes a campus, several, or complex structure. Only single and multi-site structures are going to be recognized now. So if your organization is not currently a single or multi-site structure, we will be conducting a review and make the determination of which structure is most appropriate for your organization. PGR will inform you if any additional information is required to make that determination, and will also inform you of your organization and which structure it will fall under. So no need to panic if you're currently a campus or several site or complex structure. PGR will be doing a review. We'll make sure we get you classified correctly as either a single site or multi-site structure when we transition to that new standard. Okay, our next big topic here is the future of remote auditing with the new version of the standard. So clause 8.5.4.2 says that where a physical location of a site exists and ICT is utilized, a maximum of 50% of the audit duration may be conducted remotely. And ICT stands for Information and Communication Technology. So this is a change from the previous version of the standard where only a maximum of 30% of the audit duration was able to be conducted remotely. Now, this also means that once that transition to AS9104/1A is complete, conducting any audit of a physical location 100% remotely will not be permitted. So the amount of 100% virtual audits that we've been doing for aerospace has really decreased since 2020 and 2021. Most of our clients are back to on-site audits. But there are still a few that had been conducted 100% remotely recently due to a couple existing kind of special circumstances. Those are no longer going to be applicable or available to you, I mean, in the new version of the standard. We just cannot do 100% remote audits for physical locations. However, 8.5.4.3 says where a physical location of a site does exist, i.e. a virtual site, reference IAF MD1, ICT shall be utilized in accordance with IAF MD4. So let's break down this concept of a virtual site a bit more because it's definitely a new concept. What is a virtual site according to IAF MD1? Virtual location where a client organization performs work or provides a service using an online environment allowing persons from different physical locations to execute a process. So note one says that a virtual site cannot be considered as such where the processes must be executed in a physical environment. So for example, if there's warehousing, physical testing laboratories, installation or repairs of physical products, manufacturing of physical products, if that's happening, then virtual site cannot be considered. That would be considered a physical site. But note two says that an example of a virtual site is a design and development organization with all employees performing work located remotely, working in a cloud environment. So if your organization has a site like that, where the activity performing is being performed in the cloud environment, whether it's design and development, if it's, you know, consulting for example, then you may be looking at a virtual site here. And if that's the case, that would be completed virtually, that audit. It says in note three that a virtual site is considered a single site for the purposes of calculating audit time. And then also says in note four, for further information, see also IAF MD4, the use of information and communication technology, ICT, for auditing and assessment purposes. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. What does IAF MD4 indicate must happen? So for the past 3 years, all of our remote auditing or virtual auditing has been done using ICT and following the IAF MD4. And so we would continue in the same manner as if it was a virtual site. And so if you have had a virtual audit with PJR, you may remember that a form would be completed to ensure that the organization has the capabilities and infrastructure for a remote audit to take place. That would be the same moving forward. If it was determined that the organization was capable, then we would then set up a live stream audit on GoToMeeting, or if your organization preferred a different platform, we would consider using that as well. Then audit duration would be calculated the same as it was for a physical on-site audit. And so that would be the process if we do have any clients that have a virtual site. Okay, our next big topic here is new documentation submission requirements. And as it says in 9.1.10, AQMS certified organizations shall provide data required by the standard to their CB prior to initial surveillance and recertification audits for the completion of the OCAP analysis. And we'll dive into more of what that OCAP analysis means. Also, AS9101G, this standard was just released, and there is a requirement in it stating that the documentation requested prior to the audit must be received by the certification body 90 days prior to the audit. So we'll talk about all this a little bit more here. What does this mean? CBs must now complete an OCAP analysis, which means organization certification analysis process, in order to determine audit time duration. So when we schedule your audit, we can, prior to receiving this documentation, once an information is received, the audit duration may change. So information is required to be verified once the auditor is on site. Therefore, we cannot have this information submitted too far in advance. So if you send that information to us a year before your audit, that may be a bit too early because chances are by the time your audit happens, some of the information may change. Your on-time delivery information may be different. You may have had a different management review since then. So we kind of have to find that sweet spot of when we need that information. And as we mentioned, in AS9101G, Clause 6.1.4 states that documentation has to be submitted at least a minimum of 90 days prior to the audit. So therefore, we think that the information needs to be received approximately 3 to 4 months prior to the audit date. That gives us enough time to, you know, complete that OCAP analysis. It should be up to date enough that when the auditor gets on site, he can verify it, when he or she can verify it. And so your scheduler will send you the request for the information approximately 6 months prior to your audit. So then you have, you know, 2 to 3 months to get that information together, submit it to us, and then we can do that OCAP analysis to determine your audit time duration. Okay, and so here's a list of all the documentation that you are required to submit to us. And so PGR has requested some of this information in the past from you. You may remember submitting this to us before the audit in the past, but it's going to be a very strict requirement now moving forward, and we have to make sure that we get all of this. So let's break it down here. We need a copy of the your interaction of processes, a copy of the internal audit program, and if you have a procedure for internal audits, that as well, a copy of your latest internal audit reports and findings, copy of the latest management review information, a copy of on-time delivery goals and actuals, a copy of conformity of delivered product or service goals and actuals, so your product quality or service quality information, your customer satisfaction goals and actuals, a copy of customer complaints or feedback, including customer scorecards, a copy of product-related safety issues, if applicable, if there have been any, a confirmation of the number of sites, a confirmation of number of employees per site, confirmation of the scope of your certification, and a list of additional aerospace standards utilized, such as AS9146 for FOD prevention and AS9102 for first article inspection. So again, all this needs to be submitted to PGIR at least 90 days before your audit, and we will review that and then use that to complete our OCAP analysis, which then could result in audit duration reductions or additions, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. So our last topic is the new audit time calculation. And so just to clarify a couple terms here, audit duration means the time from the opening meeting to the closing meeting during your audit. Then we have the audit time, which is all on-site and off-site time. This includes planning, report writing, auditing, and NCR management that may not happen on-site. Okay. So as we mentioned, there's quite a list of document information that needs to be submitted to us, and this will be reviewed and used to determine the risk level of your organization. So if you look at Table 7, this is in this new standard. It has a few risk factors there, and these are going to be based on the items that you submit to us. So it's got the complexity, internal audits, on-time delivery, conformity of delivered product or service, customer complaints and feedback, and then the AQMS process effectiveness from the previous audit report. So for that one, we look at your previous aerospace audit and look at the PAIRs, those process effectiveness assessment results, and look at the lowest value of those PAIRs. So if you have looked at your recent audit reports, you'll see that in those PAIRs, there's a scoring system, and they can be rated from 1 to 5, with 5 meaning that kind of, you know, you're meeting your goals and there have been no nonconformities in that process, and 1 being the lowest score there. And so as you can see here, it kind of breaks down how we determine the risk level of your organization. For each of these risk factors, we have a risk score that can be 1 for low, 3 for medium, 6 for high. And then those are added all up together to come up with a overall risk score. And then that leads us to either risk is high, risk is medium, or risk is low. So they give an example here where for this organization here has a 6 for complexity. They have a high complexity. They have low risk for their internal audits. You know, their internal audits are thorough. They're coming up with good findings, that type of thing. That would give us a low score there. They also have a low risk for on-time delivery, which means that they're exceeding their on-time delivery goals. For product quality, they have a medium here, which means that they're meeting their quality goals, but not exceeding. The same for customer complaints and feedback, they're meeting those. And then they're giving a low risk for their PAIRs because they received a 5 for their lowest PAIR score. And so we add all that together to get, excuse me, a risk score of 15, which leaves us to the 24 to 12 range, which is a medium risk. So that's going to be how the risk level of your organization is determined. Okay, and then table 8 here, this is how we determine the starting point for your audit duration, and that's based off employee count. So as you can see in the far left column there, it's got the number of personnel, and it's got a different brackets starting with 1 to 5 and then 6 to 10 and so on. And so wherever your organization falls, so let's say you've got 34 employees, that would put you in this 26 to 45 bracket, which means if you're having a stage 1 audit, you would have 5 days. If it's a surveillance audit, it's 2. Whoops, excuse me. And then if it's a recertification audit, it would be 4. And once the starting audit duration is determined, your organization's risk level that we previously talked about will be addressed in the following manner. If you're considered low risk after we do that analysis, there's a 10% audit time reduction. Medium risk, there's no change. And if we determine that you're high risk, there's a 10% addition there. And that's based on table 9 here on the right. In addition, site-specific processes are then reviewed and could also result in a reduction to a site's audit duration. Therefore, it's extremely important that your interaction of processes is clear as to what is done at each site. As you can see in the right hand there, the table 10, it shows that there's a 10% reduction if management doesn't happen at a certain site. If design doesn't occur, that's a 20% reduction, and so on. So you know, it needs to be clear as it can be what's happening at each site so that we can properly you know, give some of these audit duration reductions if there are certain processes not happening at certain sites. Okay, then we have a couple more requirements here that relate to audit duration. 8.5.1.6.5D says that the total reduction by site after all adjustments, including rounding, shall not exceed 50% of the audit duration per table 8. So the most reduction that we could provide is a 50% reduction. So just something to keep in mind. Then we have an 8.5.1.6.6. To determine audit time, 20% shall be added to the total audit duration for all sites. This added time is used for the OCAP analysis, for audit planning, and for report writing. So there's kind of this additional time that's for planning of the audit, for the auditor's report writing, for NCR management, and for us to utilize this OCAP tool. Okay, so here's kind of an example to make sense of all this. Let's say we have an organization that has their recertification audit coming up. They have 66 employees. We've determined that they're a low risk level and design is not applicable. So starting out, we'll look at the base audit duration for 66 employee organization. And so we'll go back a bit here to table 8, which shows us that an organization with 66 employees would have a 5.5 base audit duration for the recertification audit. So that's our starting point. And then we see that they were determined to be a low risk organization, which based on table 9 gives us a 10% reduction. And then they do not design or develop any products or services, so they get a 20% reduction on top of that. So as we can see, obviously 10% plus 20% gives us that 30% total reduction. That's based on that base audit time of 5.5, so that's 1.65 days. And so then 1.65 deducted from 5.5 brings us to 3.85, which we then have to round up to the nearest half day, which brings us to 4.0. So 4 days is that audit time now. And then we add the 20% for planning, which brings us to a total of 4.8. So that there is an example of how that audit time is going to be determined now. Again, it's you know, based on employee count, and then it's also based on that OCAP analysis, which is a result of the review of that documentation that you sent us beforehand. So it's really important to get that information in at least 90 days before the audit. It's important that we know what's happening at each site so we can get you the most reduction possible. And so just knowing that, that's how things will be going with the new audit time calculation in the new standard. Okay. So here's kind of the basic timeline information, and this is the most up-to-date we have. The transition deadline for certification bodies in the US is January 10th, 2024. So a little less than a year is when all certification bodies must be transitioned to the new standard. And PJR plans on transitioning in late 2023. So that's the timeline that we're currently working towards. Okay, any questions from anyone? I'm not seeing any written in the question bar at this time, but I'll give a few minutes in case anyone thinks of anything. And if you do think of something after the presentation, please feel free to reach out to Amanda Brown. She is our aerospace program manager and kind of our subject matter expert when it comes to these standards. So her email address is listed here. It's abrown@pjr.com. Now we'll just give a few minutes to see if any questions pop up in the question bar. Okay, I thought I saw someone raise their hand. Maybe not. Al, did you have a question? I can go ahead and unmute you. Oh, I see it in the chat there. Okay, and Al asked, any changes to internal audit requirements? So nothing is changing in the AS 9100 standard or 9120 or 9110 standard for internal audit requirements. So you know, as far as I know, there's nothing changing for you as an organization in terms of completing your internal audits. It's just that we're going to need those internal audits submitted to us 90 days before the audit. And we'll review those and take that into account when we determine your risk level of your organization. Hopefully that answered your question there. Any other questions? Give it maybe one more minute. Here we go. Okay. Could you clarify your question for me, Al? I think it says certification TPABASD. Probitas. I'm not quite sure what you're asking there. Oh, is that, maybe that's the second part of your first question. Okay. Then yes, it stays the same. I don't believe there's any changes to internal audit requirements in terms of 9.2 of the standard. That has not changed. And in terms of the 9.2 of AS 9100, 9110, 9120, no changes there. Okay, any other questions? Okay, well, if anyone thinks of anything after the presentation or even, you know, a few days, a few weeks from now, again, please feel free to reach out to Amanda Brown. Her email there is abrown@pjr.com. You can also always call PGR headquarters and ask for Amanda Brown or ask for myself if you think of anything. But thank you all for joining today. I hope you have a lovely day and a great weekend.